A Kings Island Gold Pass is your ticket to unlimited visits this year and all through 2025. Make the park your own with access to 2 years of tricks and treats, Halloween Haunt, and Winterfest, plus an expanded Soak City featuring the all-new dual racing water coaster River Racers coming in 2025. All for our lowest price of the season. Just 10 payments of $9 after initial payment plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry, price goes up September 3rd. Get your Gold Pass at visitkingsisland.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris, what are we listening to?
A little yacht rock for you Monday, Jeffrey. That's Summer Breeze by Stills and Frost. Sending that out to Grizzlies team president Jason Wexler. That is his favorite annual joke to suggest that singing that song to yourself with the phrase Summer League instead of Summer Breeze as the title in honor of the first day of NBA Summer League, at least for the Grizzlies.
That's got to be like one of the signature, like if I say Yacht Rock, Summer Breeze, you don't have to name too many songs until you get to Summer Breeze.
It's, you know, that feels like you're on a boat and not like on a bass boat in Arkansas. You're out on the ocean with that one.
That's a boat that has a Yeti cooler with it.
Yeah, that is yacht rock, not pontoon rock.
Yes, 100%. Okay, a few of Grizzlies bits of news that I kind of want to discuss with you, but I just want to get your overall thoughts. The Grizzlies have overhauled their coaching staff. It's something that we've known that was going to happen, but it feels like now the news is we've got all the names and now we have the roles. As you look at everything that has changed, what is your reaction?
You mean for the coaching staff specifically or just like the whole offseason?
Yeah, do you think, I guess this is the question I should ask, and I should rephrase it as a better question. Do you think these changes signal anything?
Well, I think, you know, a year ago they made some coaching, some less dramatic, but they made some coaching staff changes, and they talked about, you know, addressing their half-court offense.
Yeah.
And we had a whole new battery of lingo, right? Your first year, your second year, there's always new coach speak, right?
Yep. I had to look up what kind of speed transmission we had. Do we have a 5-speed? Was it a 6-speed? I didn't know.
Right. So that theory, among many other theories, the theory of Marcus Smart, there are lots of theories that did not get tested last season because the whole thing blew up. And so you couldn't, there's no proof of concept because you weren't able to test the concept. And so we don't know, like, whether offensive changes, if there even were any, they were gasping for breath all season. We don't know whether the Marcus Smart thing works because we didn't get to test it. You know, we haven't really fully tested Luke Kennard with the core in any significant way because as soon as they acquired Luke Kennard a season and a half ago, things started falling apart.
Well, and so he got hurt in the play, and it felt like the moment that they were they were committed to it, Luke hurt his shoulder.
Right. And so if you said they were going to bring him back to Kennard, which I do, that is my sense, I think in some ways they're going to try to test the theory they weren't able to test last season. And part of that is the idea of tweaking their offense. And so instead of just running back whatever they tried to change last season, I think they're pushing forward on that with some new coaching hires. You know, the guy they brought in a year ago to help reform their offense is one of the guys who's back. But they've added Patrick St. James. or St. Andrews, whatever his name is.
St. Andrews.
But now they brought in a new guy who's going to be the lead assistant, the guy from Paris. And so I think it's a combination of we want to test. We like the team we've assembled. We didn't get to test out last season. So we want to still see if this works. See if Marcus Smart works. See if Luke Kennard works. Now you've added Zach Edey to the mix. See if that works. So we like our team. We're not drastically shaking up our team because we think the problem last season was the injuries, not the team. And so now we've added Edey to what we already had. We believed in it last season, even though we didn't get to test it because we didn't have it available. We're adding Edey to it. We believe in this, but we need to tweak our systems around it to try to, you know, get better production out of it. And so I think you go into the season with, you know, hopefully a whole team in terms of health, and then with what you think will be a better strategic approach to that team, and then you see what happens with it. You roll it out and see if it works, and if it doesn't, you have abilities to pivot or to supplement from there.
Does it seem like it's competing ideas when you look at the style of play that they brought in, which feels like it's more of the five out kind of, you know, free form that we see in the NBA? Does that compete with the idea of we think Zach Edey makes us better? Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, are those, so, like,
yeah,
those work against each other?
I am a little reluctant to embrace the assumptions of radical change people have whenever there's some new assistant coach or whatever. Like, when the Grizzlies hired the guy Noah LaRoche to be their player development guy earlier in the summer, remember, like, Drew did the big story, and there was all the YouTube clips about, yep, look at this guy's radical offense. No one will ever set a screen again, right? And I had a longtime Grizzlies fan text me in the middle of the summer admonishing me for writing about and talking about Donovan Klingon and Zach Edey, because he said, haven't you watched these Noah LaRoche videos? They're not going to get a center like that. They don't want a big center who sets screens. That's not what this team wants. Don't you understand what they're doing? And guess what? They tried to trade up to get Donovan Klingon, and then they drafted Zach Edey at number 9.
Right.
And so this idea, and I've watched the YouTube clips of the team in Paris, this new lead assistant coach. It's not like some radical difference from just the way NBA teams play, honestly. Like, it's really more marginal than that. Like, there's lots of screens getting set, and there's, like, you know. And so to me, it's more about ultimately execution and talent. I think the coaching stuff is at the margins, honestly, when it comes to strategy. So I don't assume that they're going to look dramatically different in terms of style of play than they've looked in the past. And the fact that they went out and got Zach Edey, who replicates the best offensive attributes of Steven Adams as a screener or an offensive rebounder, suggests to me it's not going to look radically different. It's going to be more nibbling around the edges, stylistically.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I thought Dan Devine last segment made a very good point. It's entirely possible, you know, that if most of the league is running some type of this offense, bring in maybe some of these guys and be like, how would you stop this? Like, what gives you problems? And to me, like, that's a completely reasonable thing. But I also kind of look at it a lot like, the best example I can give is the NFL went heavy, really, with Brady. They went heavy with air raid concepts. And you saw all these people that used to play or had played for Mike Leach or coached under Mike Leach, they started having these concepts in the NFL. Well, people still ran the football. Like, it wasn't just everyone was in the shotgun and whatnot. It's like you take little bits and pieces and try to implement it. But I think far too often we kind of make too much out of a little bit of news. And I kind of think that's peak of where we are in the calendar.
The Grizzlies, even though, like, the effectiveness hasn't been there for the most part, especially last season when everyone was hurt, the Grizzlies, like, shot diet has been pretty quote-unquote modern under Taylor Jenkins.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the idea that your first priority is pressuring the rim, and you leverage that into taking a lot of threes, and you don't shoot a lot of, like, mid-range stuff, that's already what they've been doing. The problem is that they haven't been making those threes, and,
right,
you know? It's been more of those kind of issues. And so that's why I think there will be changes to strategy. I think there will be more changes to vocabulary, you know. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to personnel. And you know, having Luke Kennard and Desmond Bane together is going to boost your three-point shooting? Is Jake LaRavia going to turn into the shooter you want him to be? Is Jared going to shoot 32% from three or 37% from three, right? It could be either one. Who knows? You know, I think it's going to be a blend of the strategic and just the effectiveness of the personnel. And so, but I don't think the style of play is going to look shockingly different than what it's been or what just NBA basketball looks like now.
I guess that's kind of the larger point that I've had, even dating back to last year when, okay, you bring in Patrick St. Andrews because the half-court offense was an issue. And it's like, okay, I fundamentally agree that in the playoffs, the half-court offense is kind of what got them. At the same time, right. Like I don't know if there's a scheme answer. To me, it seems like part of the reason why they struggle in the half court is they're not a particularly great shooting team. And when you get into when it becomes a short shot clock situation, it's kind of why I know it's fun to make fun of the Bucks for what they did with Lillard and it didn't work. I kind of think the Bucks are in a spot where they didn't really get to test what they were trying to do, which was, hey, in short shot clock situations in the playoffs, teams have just been fouling Giannis, sending him to the line. It's a 50-50 proposition. We think adding Dame Lillard in a short shot clock makes the team better. Maybe it doesn't help us in the regular season. Maybe we're even slightly worse because he's not a good defender. But I felt like they didn't get to test it because, well, everyone got hurt for them too.
Well, Giannis didn't play in the playoffs. And then, like, the rest of that team just got so – the rest of that team sort of fell apart around those two guys.
Right.
Either guys got too old or guys weren't good enough. It was like it was one or the other, right?
Yes.
I'm not saying like the coaching doesn't matter. There won't be tweaks. They won't, you know, maybe you set screens higher. You get guys on the move more. So you know, some of that stuff was a little bit more that I watched from the Paris video. It was a little bit more dynamic in that case. You know, you get guys like basically driving before the screen set. The fact that Jaren developed so much more as an on-ball guy last season.
Yeah.
Maybe you see some Jaren, Zach Edey, like 4-5, like pick-and-roll kind of stuff. But I think there's more things you can incorporate into the mix. But I think ultimately it comes down to, like, are your players healthy and do guys make marginal improvements as shooters? Is John Morant going to shoot 28% from three or 34% from three?
Right.
Neither would be surprising, but it will matter, right? Is Jaren going to shoot 31 or 37? A lot of that is ultimately going to matter. And the quality of the shots they get, which is based on how your offense flows, will have some impact on that. But it'll only have so much impact. Part of that is just whether guys can make shots or not.
Yeah, I mean, I just find it hard to believe. If you have a player like Ja Morant, I find it hard to believe that you're not going to have an offense that wants him to get space. And what's the easiest way to get space? Well, set a pick at the top. Like, yeah.
This is why I never bought into the they are going to do this radical offense in which no one sets screens and you have Ja Morant, you're going to be running pick and roll. Guess what? You know, and so I never bought into any of that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let's see, we already discussed Luke Kennard. Okay, that's great. Moving on. I feel like that's become such a topic. It's like I see it the exact same way that you do. It's like this is a negotiation. Eventually they'll reach some form of an agreement. I guess
I don't even know. I don't. And when I say I don't know, I mean like I mostly mean I don't know. But I'm not even sure. Like it's an ongoing negotiation. I think there may be some parameters in place, and for whatever reason they're waiting for some things to come together. But I don't. My sense is that there's not a lot of uncertainty on that one.
It seems to me like the agent is waiting to see if he can get another offer.
I don't know that I believe that to be true, but I'm not sure. I haven't checked in on that. I've been out of town. I haven't checked in on that in a few days, but that is not really my sense of things.
Fair enough. But again, in the end, nothing has changed in your mind, correct?
No.
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
All right. Let's turn our attention to Summer League. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm in this weird spot with Summer League where I do think what Zach Edey looks like is fun. But really, like, I know all the other things that excite everyone with Gigi, with, you know, what do some of these new pieces look like? I think the thing that I'm struggling with is after Zach Edey, I'm kind of, all right, let's see. But, like, I'm not all that interested in how things look because like, G.G. Jackson could come out and perform well in summer league, and I would feel the exact same way that I did after last season. Cool. I've seen everything that I need to see. Now I want to see what he does in high leverage situations when he's not the number one option, when he's the eighth or ninth guy. Like, but we're not going to answer that in summer league. What is the right approach to, like, to view what we're going to watch the next couple of weeks?
I guess my general approach to summer league is that really bad performances are more meaningful than really good performances. I think, you know, taking it as a whole over multiple games, over one game, obviously. I think guys who have more NBA experience, it's more meaningful, again, if you have a bad performance. So, like, I think it's great that Jake LaRavia is going to play, and I think it's less a case of, you know, he has something to prove than a case of he wants to build on the momentum he finally came out of last season with. But I think if he is bad in summer league, that's a red flag. And so those are sort of my general principles with it. I think small guards, and really other than Scotty Pippen, who's a really different kind of player, they don't really have a small guard chucker on this team. Those are the guys who can really fool you in summer league.
Yeah.
Like Josh Selby was a summer league MVP. Russ Smith was a summer league MVP. It meant nothing. The Grizzlies don't really have one of those players on this team. And so, you know, I'm interested in Edie primarily. Again, he's not going to be playing, you know, he's playing against several league-sized guys, and he's playing without John Morant. So it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison for him in the NBA, but you want to see him be effective. I think you'd be concerned if he was totally not effective. Even though summer league is often not great for bigs, I think he is so big and so experienced that you expect him to be good. LaRavia, I think G.G. Jackson is more interesting to people, but LaRavia to me is probably more of a tell than anyone else other than Edie.
Just from the perspective of if it doesn't look like he's built on the momentum he had at the end of the season, that
I would, even though there are higher hopes and there should be for G.G. Jackson and higher expectations for G.G. Jackson, to me, a bad summer league from Jake LaRavia would be more persuasive than a bad summer league from G.G. Jackson.
Just because of age and experience?
Yeah, exactly right. I think, you know, G.G. played half a season. He's just still, I think, going to be the youngest guy on the team, on the summer league team. He may come out and be great, but even if he's not great, I'm not going to be worried about it. If G.G. Jackson has a bad summer league game or two, I'm not really going to care. If Jake LaRavia in year three of summer league is struggling, I think that's going to be a concern relative to like what you think you can get from them going into the season. To the degree that anything in summer league can be a concern.
What would the range of roles for LaRavia look like for you, like the high and the low?
I feel like he goes into the season as like the 11th man on the team, maybe ahead of a Conchar, ahead of Derrick Rose, definitely, ahead of Zaire Williams if he's there. I'm forgetting somebody, ahead of a Jalen Wells. So I think, you know, he's not in the 10-man rotation I would project, but I think he's 11th, you know, or should be. And if you're the 11th man in a 10-man rotation, you're going to play a lot. Because the odds of the other 10 guys all being healthy every game are pretty slim. And so I think, you know, we've seen this in the past where, like, you know, John Conchar's not in the rotation, but he plays 70 games and averages 15 minutes a game, you know?
And he had 10 starts.
Right. So I think if Jake LaRavia can be the 11th guy on your depth chart, you know, he's going to be, quote-unquote, out of the rotation, but he's going to be playing just about every night.
Yeah, and if that's the role, like, I don't have any reason to believe that he can't do that, right?
Well, my hope would be that he would be like the bigger, better Conchar, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what you're hoping with him now. You're no longer hoping that he's going to be a starter on the team. Maybe you hope that when you drafted him at 19. I think you're not really, that's not really what you're thinking about anymore. But he's only under contract for $3 million this season. You've got you know, team restricted free agent rights. You have sort of team control to some degree coming off of that. So, you know, you're back to the can you be a low-end rotation player on a good contract? And if you can be a low-end rotation player on a good contract, that's really worth having, especially if part of what you could do is be a three-point shooter, which we'll see. The theoretical Jake LaRavia as a shooter is to this point far outstripped the reality of Jake LaRavia as a shooter. But, you know, he finally had a good stretch late last season. Let's give him a chance, see if he can build on it.
Drew has always mention, even before the draft, the Grizzlies are not only looking for, you know, a starting big, they're also looking for their fourth big. Is it possible the fourth big comes from this roster that we're seeing?
I mean, I would say fifth, because I think Sarpy...
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're talking about a 10-man rotation, I think you're... I'm penciling in Jaren and Zach Edey to start, and Brandon Clark, Sarpy O'Donnell as the second unit.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
You don't have a fifth big on the main roster. Now, in reality, you'll play a lot of Jackson at the four, and you'll play some low big. I think for two reasons, they need a fifth big they can play. One is because, like I said before, like guys are not going to play 82 games, right?
Yep.
I mean, Brandon Clark coming off this injury, like you need a fifth big who can really play. And the other thing there, to me, this is one of the biggest questions with the team, is what front court combinations work if they don't include Jaren Jackson? If you go back to Zach Kleiman, what he said on draft night, he talked about, you know, we want to have options. We love our options. We know, you know, Jaren and Brandon works great together. We like Jaren and Santi, you know, playing five out. We think Jaren and Zach Edey are going to go great together. Well, Jaren's not playing 48 minutes across 82 games. So what works when he's not there? I think it's important to have a playable fifth big who can work with different combinations this sort of in that regard, too. I'm not convinced Trey Jemison on a three-way, on the two-way can be that. So to me, either they need to add a different, more experienced fifth big to the main roster, which would require three to roster spot if you assume Kennard's back, which I do, or you may look to have, you know, your Scottie Pippen Jr. of bigs on a two-way, someone other than Trey Jemison who you think can basically be a Grizzlies player on a two-way instead of a hustle player. I don't know who that would be, but I suspect that they are at least looking around to see if that guy's out there too.
Whatever happened to our boy Stevens?
Lamar?
Yeah.
I just think it's a numbers game. They have too many players at that position already. I mean, you're talking about John Conchar, Zaire Williams, and Jalen Wells, and Jake LaRavia. That's four guys who are effectively wings, not, you know, that are on your third team. Like right now, this depth chart, the third team is four wings and Derrick Rose. So I mean, there's just not a place for Lamar Stevens.
That sounds like something you could go get at the Wing Guru.
Yeah, that's right. That's the new combo.
Yeah, it's the D Rose special.
Yeah.
Yeah, four wings and a Derrick Rose. I guess the other thing that's like kind of like as we're going to watch Edey, I think the other thing I'm going to struggle with is, I presume, however they play him in over the next couple of weeks, it's not really going to reflect what he's going to like how they're going to utilize him once the actual like training camp starts. Isn't that right?
Well, I think it's hard because summer league tends to be a little bit more up and down, ragtag, you know, basketball.
Well, you're just throwing a team together and going, "All right, boys, we got to go play."
Well, yeah, no, I agree. But what I will say is that they're going to put a start. They're going to put a my presumptive starting five for the summer league team. It's a five-man unit. I think you will see in NBA games this season for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, that's probably
because
fair.
Because it's going to be Scottie Pippen Jr., who is on a two-way, but it's really going to be playing a lot for the Grizzlies primarily. And then it's going to be Jalen Wells, who may not play a lot, but it's going to be on the main roster. And then it's going to be G. Jackson, who will be in the rotation. It's going to be Jake LaRavia, who we just talked about. It's going to play a lot, probably. And then Zach Edey is probably going to be your starting center. So a Scottie Pippen, Jalen Wells, G. Jackson, Jake LaRavia, Zach Edey, five. I think you'll see that lineup in real meaningful NBA games this season. So he'll be playing with LaRavia and Jackson, real players, and he'll be playing with Pippen, who I think Pippen's going to play, it won't be every game because he's not eligible every game, but he's going to play like rotation backup point guard minutes in a lot of games for the Grizzlies this season. And you're going to see some Zach Edey, Scottie Pippen Jr. pick and rolls in real games. And so like seeing that in summer league will be a preview of coming attractions to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, what's the limit? He gets to play 41 games. I expect he plays 41 games.
Yeah, it's more than 41, but it's not. But there's a cap on it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, we'll wrap here. Does DeMar DeRozan to the Kings move the needle for you?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I think it increases their talent. DeMar DeRozan is better than Harrison Barnes.
Yes.
They increase their talent level, so that's meaningful. I think there are real fit questions on both sides of the ball. On offense, DeRozan is a guy who likes to have the ball and sort of play with the ball and like have things run through him in a half-court offense. The Kings, A, want to play fast, and B, they want to run things through Domantas Sabonis, the half-court offense and with De'Aaron Fox. So, you know, you got 48 minutes of basketball, so you can, like, use all of that. But I wonder a little bit about the fit. And then I think it's if anything, a slight downgrade defensively. I think that team is already potentially bad defensively. So I like it short-term for them, but I don't love it. I don't think it makes a big difference to their season. I think the team was already pretty good, and they're maybe slightly better, but I don't see it as a big change to their what their fortunes would be this season.
I think there's a take that I haven't really fleshed out, but I guess the thesis would be this. I think the West has way more competitive teams, but if Boston's going to be healthy and they're going to have the roster that they do, I'm not as convinced that there are as many teams from the West that can compete with Boston, but I do think there's probably like 12 teams that would be, you know, the three seed in the East. And I don't really know like how to flesh it out, but like that's kind of where I felt like watching the playoffs. I know everybody got upset that the Mavs were there, but I wasn't convinced that whatever form the Nuggets were in, that they were going to be that much tougher of a test. Like, that's just kind of what I felt when I watched the playoffs this year.
Yeah, no, I think that's generally right. I think the Thunder, I think the best version of this Thunder team, adding Hartenstein and Caruso, could jump up and be there with Boston, but it requires a little bit of a leap from them.
Right.
As a playoff level team, which we didn't see last season. They were the one seed they lost in the second round. And so they need to take a step forward. They're still pretty young. But I think on paper, that's the one team that if everything comes together, you can see sort of being on the Boston level. Especially since Boston is going to be dealing with Porzingis having a major injury going into the season.
Yeah.
But I think I wouldn't go as far down as 12. But I generally agree that if you like did a list of like the top 15 teams in the league, like Boston's going to be one. And like you may have, you know, 9 of 15 or 10 of 15 from the West.
You know? No, that's kind of how I feel. Chris, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington.
A Kings Island Gold Pass is your ticket to unlimited visits this year and all through 2025. Make the park your own with access to 2 years of tricks and treats, Halloween Haunt, and Winterfest. Plus, an expanded Soak City featuring the all-new dual racing water coaster River Racers coming in 2025. All for our lowest price of the season. Just 10 payments of $9 after initial payment plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry, price goes up September 3rd. Get your Gold Pass at visitkingsisland.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.